Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donalana Kitchen. We gather here around our kitchen table at KHOI Community Radio once a week. And we talk about lots of different things, food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions, and really fun stuff, too. We get by with a little help from our friends.
Yes. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames, community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op. And the Donalana Kitchen Show is supported by Farm to Folk, an Ames-based cooperative supporting farmers and bringing local farm produce and meats throughout the fall and winter. Information on a la carte buying options are available at farmtofolk.com.
There you go. Yes, we do get by with a little help from our friends. We're going to talk about lots of good things today. Today we're going to hear the second part of an interview with Tom Newmark from the Carbon Underground. We had a good taste of that interview last week, and we're going to finish it up today. And we will discuss some news items about things going on in Central Iowa.
There is a lot happening around here. Keep your calendars in order.
Yes.
Not to miss anything.
Today is the Feast of St. Francis, St. Francis of Assisi, who's a peacemaker and believer in reconciliation, and he's the patron saint of the animals. So let's give our thoughts to animals. Dogs, cats, birds, ponies, llamas, camels, they should all be blessed as the rest of us should all be blessed. Celebrate all the gifts they give us and honor the peacemaking spirit of St. Francis today.
Yes, I have particularly active squirrels right now. The patron saint of squirrels is smiling in my backyard.
Very good. Blessed are the squirrels, for they shall annoy us for a long time.
Well, they are amusing as well.
They are sweet. And I'm blessed. Speaking of being blessed, I'm blessed chipmunks this year. I suppose other people are, too. They're tricky little devils. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But first, before we get into that interview with Tom Newmark, it is fall, and food falls from trees. Yes, it does. This kind of time of year, things are getting ripe, and if we know where to find them and we know what to do with them, we can eat some really good things this time of year. Tell me what adventures you've had, Donna.
Well, the things that are falling from trees right now are, of course, black walnuts, chestnuts, my favorite, and I had a pawpaw experience this weekend.
A pawpaw. I thought pawpaw was just something from a child's rhyme.
Yeah, it's like mama and pawpaw, you know.
No, so tell me about pawpaws.
Well, it's a fruit, and I think Iowa is kind of its northernmost growing range. And these actually came from southeastern Iowa. And we made ice cream out of them.
Ice cream.
Well, pawpaws are they reminded me of some of the tropical fruits that I ate in Costa Rica recently. They also seemed kind of like something we used to have in California called a cherimoya. So you break them open. They looked like not very colorful, small mangoes kind of thing. But you cut into them and they have seeds that are like maybe an inch by an inch and a half.
Kind of fairly large. Kind of hefty seeds.
Yeah, so you can easily pick the seeds out. And then you end up with this very mushy white to light yellow, very subtle flavor, like almost like juicy fruit gum.
Oh.
Like multi-fruit flavor or something. Somewhere between banana and, I don't know, it was hard to identify. So we just mixed the pawpaw pulp after we kind of strained all the seeds out and everything in a ice cream base without vanilla, because I was afraid the vanilla would actually overwhelm the pawpaw flavor. And it, of course, was delicious and rich.
Ah, good.
And if you feel like putting in a pawpaw tree, you should call, I think it's, who's growing them? Tom Wall is growing them.
A Practical Farmers of Iowa connected person named Tom Wall, and he has an orchard, a nuttery.
Right. He grows a lot of chestnuts as well.
He grows trees, and he's over in southeastern Iowa, and he's kind of pushing the limit on a lot of different varieties and having a good time doing it, a lot of success. And he sells rootstock, and I think he sells the fruit and the nuts, too. So that's Tom Wall.
I think it's a pick-your-own kind of deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, you actually have to go there. So David Weisberger went and brought the pawpaws back. And we made pawpaw ice cream.
As I recall, Tom Wall's farm is called Red Fern Farm.
That's right. So I'd like to tell you that maybe next weekend I'll make chestnut ice cream, because that really is one of my favorites.
Well, you do good ice cream, and whatever ice cream you make, I will eat. So pawpaws, I have been given a pawpaw or two from a pawpaw actually very close to central Iowa, because they were growing on the ISU campus. I don't know where they are.
Yes, there is a rumor. This is one of those urban legends of Ames, that somewhere on the ISU campus there is a pawpaw tree.
Ooh, that's a nice thing to think about.
You know what the other thing is? Have we started persimmons yet?
No.
We're still too early?
Well, I don't know. I don't have a persimmon tree. It's just that usually, like pawpaws, usually somebody comes up to me and says, here, have a persimmon. Yeah?
I can verify that at the Iowa Arboretum there are persimmon trees. Now, whether they're actually ripe right now, but that's another one of those local fruits that when it happens, they are magical. Magical.
They are. So food does fall from trees. We have actually tasted that, and that's how it works. Besides the usual apples and pears and things,
oh, yes.
There's some really good
stuff. Looks like it's a mega apple harvest this year coming right along.
Yes, wonderful stuff. Apple harvest and apple pressing
and
cider.
Didn't you do a grape pressing at your house as well?
Oh, grapes. Yes, grapes. We did. A friend is doing some experimental wild yeast grape wine making, and we shall see how that works. I don't know anything about making wine myself, but it looks like things are humming
along.
But
we'll keep tasting as it develops, right?
All right. You're good at this, Donna. Right, this is good.
Well, we'll have an opinion, you know.
There you go. So we're going to be talking about the carbon underground. Donna, tell us about your time in Costa Rica.
A few weeks ago, I was invited to a lovely place in Costa Rica called Finca Luna Nueva, which means Farm of the New Moon. It's an eco-lodge and a biodynamic farm. And Tom and Terry Newmark live there a good bit of the year when they're not living in St. Louis. And Tom is the co-founder of Carbon Underground, which is a NGO to promote carbon sequestration, and also something called Regeneration International, which is, promoting the agronomic parts of carbon sequestration. So while I was there, I sat down and recorded Tom, and we chatted so long about these issues that we both are kind of crazy about that we've had to split the interview up in two. So today we're having the second half, and for all of you culinarily inclined people, we also get into a bit of chocolate making. They do have cacao trees in Costa Rica, and I learned how to make chocolate, which is called in Latin theobromine or bromide or brom something, that translates as food of the gods. So here is the rest of the interview. If you missed last week, you can download it or listen to it online, so you have the whole interview. But let's get on with Tom Newmark in Costa Rica.
Last week, as we usually do, we started out with bummer news. The carbon
We have too much carbon in the air.
Too much carbon.
That's causing
that was a bummer
global warming.
Global warming stuff.
It could make species extinction, and our own included.
Right.
That's bummer news.
So we're kind of moving into the better news, and a bit of the better news is that there are many new / old agricultural methods that are being used to help keep carbon in the ground.
And take it out of the air and put it back in the ground, because carbon in the ground is useful, whereas carbon in the air is not a good thing.
Very good. We pick up this interview with Tom Newmark talking about grazing and cattle management.
There's plenty of good science on this.
Dr. Richard Teague at Texas A&M published a paper recently showing that those ranchers in Texas using adaptive multi-paddock grazing had a carrying capacity, a stocking rate, that was at least two times their neighbors, and soil organic matter was being regenerated at a rate of 3 tons per hectare per year.
Okay, so that's like inches?
Inches. Can be.
Yeah.
Gabe Brown, a regenerative farmer and rancher in North Dakota.
Very popular. Lots of Iowa farmers have been up to visit Gabe Brown. He's amazing.
He has added more than 10 inches of topsoil, I think, over the last 19 years.
Whew.
That's an extraordinary amount. When people say, oh, well, topsoil, it takes, and Gabe Brown has done, I think, 11 inches in 19 years. So, and in Richard Teague's case, not only was soil.
Wait, tell us Richard Teague again?
Texas A&M,
okay.
Looking at adaptive multi-paddock grazing, comparing adaptive multi-paddock ranchers to conventional ranchers. Greater productivity, greater soil formation, and where in Texas, in the counties where the rivers had disappeared, ponds and streams were what are called ephemeral. They were only there a little bit of the year. After a few years of adaptive multi-paddock grazing, the rivers and streams and ponds were year-round. So I just want to tell all the farmers and all the people that eat food, and to the children of farmers wondering what will happen to their land, because they can see it degrading. This happens quickly. Regeneration happens quickly.
It's so true, Tom. I was out of the Midwest. I'm a Midwestern girl, a Corn Belt girl. I was gone for 40 years. I came back again. And after the corn is harvested, which is all winter long, until it grows again in the spring, it looks like slash and burn. It's like a dreadful planet. It's so sad.
The key to all of this is the recognition that soil organic matter is created by plants photosynthesizing. Here's how it works. You take the solar power of sunlight.
Which we still have plenty of.
And it's free. Mm-hmm. And it's bathing every inch of soil in Iowa at no cost. And what you need is a solar-powered engine collecting that sunlight. And that's called a green plant. And the chlorophyll, the chloroplasts in the green plant are able to trap the photons of sunlight and use those photons of solar power to mix together water and carbon dioxide to create carbohydrates and then a byproduct of oxygen. So we breathe as a result of photosynthesis, and we have carbohydrates. And the plants use the carbohydrates, the plant sugars, to fuel their own metabolism. But a lot of that carbohydrate created by photosynthesis then passes through the roots into the soil food web. And those exudates of sugars into the soil being processed by the fungi, microorganisms, protists, archaea, nematodes, worms, voles, everything in the soil food web. That's how we get topsoil. Topsoil is not created through the decomposition of leaf litter and organic debris. Soil is created principally, overwhelmingly, through what's called the liquid carbon pathway, through the photosynthetic creation of sugars that are carbon
rich. Okay, so why is our corn and soy monoculture failing us then?
Because we are applying synthetic nitrogen fertilizer, which is causing cancer-like growth of microorganisms in the soil.
Okay, define cancer-like growth.
Growth that is so rapid that it literally eats away at the very body of the soil.
Okay.
And so we're applying these growth factors, the nitrogen.
So we're all on soil steroids.
It's like steroids. We are killing the soil food web
by
the application of pesticides.
The glyphosate, and all of the other ones.
The atrazine, the glyphosate. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We are.
Of course, the weeds that they want to kill. What else do they do?
It distorts the activity of the soil biome.
Yeah.
Right? And then finally, the fungal network, the mycelial network, the very structure.
So it's like a human being on antibiotics all the time.
Well, it would be the plowing of the soil, mm-hmm. breaking apart the mycelial fungal networks of the soil. It would be like if we took a machine to our bodies and cut apart our nervous system and our capillary arterial system, and it caused everything just to bleed and leach out.
Mm-hmm.
It's insanity. What we've done to the soil is insanity, and we're reaping the consequences of that. And we're now being told repeatedly that we have between one generation to the end of the century to get our act together, or there will be no food production left for ourselves and for our children. So again, whether your listeners believe in climate change or not, they probably believe in farming and they believe in eating food.
And retaining the health of their family farm is very important
it
to most
important.
Iowa farmers.
And so,
or, I mean, it's like, would a banker want to degrade his assets? No.
Correct. Bad news is that this has all happened in the last 150 years. Bad news is that there are many scientists who believe that we can reverse all of the damage that we've done from the...
Including climate change.
By promoting the worldwide adoption of regenerative agriculture.
Okay, we are off the bummer news, folks. Here comes the good news.
There are many scientists, and I could be happy to provide citations for your listeners. They can reach me, and you know how to put them in contact with me.
Is this on the Carbon Underground website?
It is indeed.
So tell us the Carbon Underground is Tom's vehicle for publicizing this, and it is found on the web at?
It is found on the web at www.thecarbonunderground.org. And there's another organization of which I'm a co-founder, which is called Regeneration International, which is www.regenerationinternational.org.
Tom is very serious about this.
And these organizations are clearinghouses and advocates for regenerative agricultural practices. There is a wonderful organic organization called iFoam, and their website also has information about what they call Organic 3.0, which is an organic practice which is devoted to rebuilding soil organic matter.
What's the 3.0 bit?
Well, 1.0 was Sir Albert Howard and J.I. and Robert Rodale. That was the organic and its original impulse, which used to be in this country called humus farming. Organic.
Right, so this is from the 50s and earlier.
30s and 40s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is the original impulse and the original expression of organic was Organic 1.0, and then we now regrettably have come to a point where we have more industrial organic, which does not pay as much attention
to soil building
as it should. And now Andre Loy, the head of iPhone, and iFoam have articulated a call to action to go to Organic 3.0, which is in some ways to go back to the future, some ways to go back to the founding principles of organic, to use the best of modern science and the best of modern agronomical practices.
Right. We do know how to do this.
We know how to do this. And
listening to KHOI 89.1 FM. And you are also listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are running an interview that Donna did in Costa Rica with Tom Newmark talking about carbon sequestration.
And chocolate.
And chocolate.
And scientists worldwide believe that using regenerative organic agriculture, both in grassland management and for farming on arable surfaces, can, within one generation...
That would include corn and soy and grains, of course.
It absolutely would. There's a scientist at New Mexico State University named Dr. David Johnson, who's done some exquisite research on farming using a compost that he has created, which is fungally dominated, which dramatically accelerates the sequestration of organic matter in the soil. And using his system of organic agriculture, using compost application, he has found that he is able to sequester between 9 and 17 tons of carbon.
Okay, so let me translate sequester. That means not only by stopping fossil fuels or leave it in the ground, which means we're not going to put more of it out there, but even if we don't, even if we stop now putting more of it out there, we are in a cycle where it's going to go on and get worse and worse and worse for a while.
For 1,000 years.
Okay, so really, how can we get that carbon out?
Reducing fossil fuel emissions is logical and necessary. Only half. It is insufficient.
For our grandchildren.
Billions of climate refugees.
Yeah.
Within 20 years, there'll probably be 50 or 100 million. Our U.S. military believes that climate change is the single greatest threat.
Destabilizer, absolutely.
So if you believe in the United States, if you believe in the land and soil and peace and security of the United States,
or anywhere,
you will. I mean, there, you know, here we are in a political election in the United States, and we're all thinking about our country and our future. If you are truly a patriot, mm-hmm. and believe in the enduring values of the United States, it is mandatory that we start to rebuild the very land that has been productive.
The ground
and
under our feet, which have been our best natural resources.
So if this land is your land and this land is our land, then let's treat it with dignity and regenerate it. And David Johnson has shown...
Tell us who David Johnson is.
Professor
again.
Of Agronomy at New Mexico State
oh,
University.
Okay, okay.
Using regenerative practices that he was able to sequester 9 to 17 tons.
That means pulling the carbon...
out of the atmosphere.
Yeah, it's not only not putting more in, it's taking it back.
The Earth wants her carbon back.
Right, we don't need a big technofix. You know what? Larry Kopold told a story the other day. And
Larry is my co-founder of the Carbon
Underground.
Yeah,
and he's an old friend of mine, great, great man. His main business practice is in advertising. So he works with some of the largest corporations in the world. And he said he was at a meeting where he was introduced to a big, big mucky muck at one of the major oil companies. And the guy said, yeah, we know climate change is real. And we know that some of those molecules out there have our name on them. And we want to put them back in. We really do.
I was there for that conversation.
Ah.
So I heard that with my own ears.
Oh.
And it's important that people hear that even leading companies in the fossil fuel industry,
I mean big ones,
as big as they get,
yep,
are acknowledging that climate change is real and that the only fix is to pull carbon out of the atmosphere using regenerative practices.
Okay, so carbon sequestration really means pulling it back into the soil. And
correct.
It is done through farming.
Done through farming and will include in farming ranching. So farming and ranching, food production, done regeneratively. So let's use some simple math. There are 5 billion hectares. A hectare is 2.47 acres.
Okay, so 10 billion plus acres.
So there's 5 billion hectares of grassland and arable land on the planet.
Okay, and for us in Iowa, it's mostly to the west of us, where they've started to plant corn and used irrigation from the Ogallala Aquifer to draw down the... I mean, we know this area very well.
So there's 3.5 billion hectares of grasslands and 1.5 of farmland in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just use a few simple numbers. David Johnson said that...
He's our New Mexico guy.
Using farmland.
Like in Iowa, with deep soils.
Like in Iowa. Actually, it's even more challenging where he was doing it. He was doing it in New Mexico.
Right, that's grazing land,
isn't
it?
Where it's really difficult to do
that. It's drier.
He was able to sequester between 9 and 17 tons of carbon per hectare per year. So just do the math of 9, let's just use the lowest number, 9 tons times 5 billion hectares. That's an extraordinary quantity of carbon that could be sequestered using regenerative practices.
Okay, so if we did these practices, I think you've told me this because you're going to have to say this again. In 10 years, if this is all of the grazing lands on the planet.
Well, let me just tell you what David Johnson's conclusion was. David Johnson's conclusion was if we just used 22% of the land that's either grazing or farming on the planet. In other words, the amount of land...
22%, that's like less than a quarter.
It's the land that currently lies fallow because it's unproductive.
Oh. Okay.
So if we just use the current fallow, unproductive...
Like the BLM land all over the West?
If we just used that worldwide...
Short grass prairies.
We could sequester 100% of current man-made emissions of fossil fuels.
Within what time frame?
Immediately.
Like 10 years?
Immediately. Every year.
Every year?
We could sequester 100% of the annual in contribution from all fossil fuels, from all industry, from all textile and food production. So if you then had more than 22%.
So global warming would not be a problem. Like what's that quotation about getting us back to pre-industrial levels? How do we do that?
What we do is pre-industrial levels of CO2 were approximately 270
parts per million.
Of CO2 per million. We're at 400 plus parts per
million. Yes, we've well exceeded the Bill McKibben 350 number.
Yes, and what I would say to Bill McKibben, in all respect, because your organization is 350.org, is what's your plan to go from 400 to 350.
Besides keep it in the ground.
Because that doesn't get you from 400 back to 350. For every part per million that you want to go backwards, you have to draw down from the atmosphere at least 2 billion tons of carbon. That's just physics. You have to reduce the atmospheric carbon levels by 2 billion tons of carbon for every part per million you want to have reduced. So if we want to go from 400 parts per million to 350 parts per million, we have to...
Which is even not the optimal number.
It's not. It's a number that I would argue still is a
it's
death...
It's too high,
it's
right.
A death sentence for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's the number that you choose, if that's your target,
mm-hmm.
you still have to sequester 100 billion tons of carbon, legacy carbon, that is currently in the atmosphere.
And we'll go on doing its thing for a while.
That means that if worldwide... Every car, every industrial plant, every source of fossil fuel emissions, every source of fresh annual man-made greenhouse gas were to stop worldwide.
Right, like leave it in the ground, everybody's in electric cars, all solar, wind, geothermal.
So, in other words, if you believe in fairy tales,
mm-hmm.
if this could happen by the waving of a magic wand,
now,
you
yeah.
still haven't fixed the problem.
You haven't sucked it back in.
You need to take 100 billion tons of carbon out of the atmosphere, even to get to a point that's a disaster. So I would say to the... In all respect, and I'm sure they thought this through,
mm-hmm.
the Dr. Jim Hansons, the Bill McKibbens,
believe
that we've got to get down to... The question is, what is your technology for doing that? And there is no technology. There is no...
There's agricultural, ancient technology.
There's photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
It's proven. It's time-tested.
There's an answer.
It works.
There's a remedy. We can do it.
So I wake up hopeful
it relies
every
on farmers.
Single morning.
Yeah.
Every morning
Absolutely.
I wake up. Absolutely. You know, here we are at my regenerative farm in Costa Rica, Finca Luna Nueva. And by the way, if you're interested in what we're doing here...
Oh, you guys have a website. It can be visited. It's lovely, lovely, lovely. I've had a wonderful time here. Thank you so much, Tom.
It's been our joy.
A vacation that is also an education and a time out from certain pressing realities where you see the hopefulness, the realistic. I mean, this is not utopia here. This is a realistic, major solution.
It's a working regenerative farm.
Right.
And our website is Finca, F-I-N-C-A, which means farm in Spanish, Finca Luna, L-U-N-A, Nueva.
New Moon.
N-U-E-V-A, Lodge.com. Finca Luna Nueva Lodge.com. And we have a charming Ecolodge here, where people from all over the world come. Yeah. Monkeys and
sloths, toucans,
and it's paradise here. But it's also a working and living demonstration of how agriculture can reverse climate change. You can also go zip lining and whitewater rafting and see volcanoes.
And the hot springs.
You can do all that from here.
I mean, it's beautiful.
But you will. Everybody who comes here eats farm to table and has a tour of our farm.
Right. I've been looking in. I've been in the kitchen. Let me tell you, folks, it's very interesting.
We're grateful that Donna's been in the kitchen.
And they make chocolate here. Did I tell you?
Yeah, we have a chocolate.
The food of the gods.
Right.
Tell them about the cacao.
Cacao, the scientific name of cacao is Theobroma cacao.
Which in Latin means
food of the gods.
Food of the gods.
And we have
We
have a chocolate plantation. So we grow the cacao trees. We harvest the pods. We ferment. We roast. We grind. We make the drink in the ancient Mayan way, the drink of the gods, which is spicier than you've ever had chocolate.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And spectacular. It's better than any cup of coffee. We also make delicious 70 to 85% cacao, regenerative, organic.
I'm bringing a little home with me back to Iowa. Oh, yeah.
And
the brand is called Two Little Monkeys or something.
Two Little Monkeys.
By Ibrahim, is that?
Ismael.
Ismael is the chocolate man.
Ismael and his wife, Lindy.
Oh, boy.
Are the chocolatiers.
And the two little monkeys are his children, so.
And so you can come to the farm and take our chocolate tours and make chocolate. It's one of the highlights of many people's trips.
Here. This has been a wonderful, wonderful visit. And Tom's commitment to saving the planet, I have to say, it is, for me, the most positive message that we can have, that actually farming and farmers are the solution, the only solution.
The farmers of the future will be recognized as the heroes who saved us from the ravages of soil loss and climate change. There's no planet B.
I'm sorry, I'm not ready to go live on Mars. It's not happening for me.
Well, the answer is that Earth, I think, can once again be an earthly paradise.
Well, it might,
if we farm regeneratively.
I hope so, because otherwise it'll go on without humans.
Well, it will, but I look at my children and my grandchildren and your children and grandchildren, Donna, and I'm gonna there's spring in my step and there's still fight in my game, and we're gonna keep working to regenerate the planet.
That's right. It's not over yet, folks. So you've heard it all from La Finca Nueva?
Finca
Luna Nueva. There we go. Sorry about my Spanish.
Finca Luna Nueva Lodge.
Yes. So do get on your computer, look up some of these things, and thank you so much to Tom and Terry Newmark, who have hosted me here in paradise for 10 days.
It's been our joy. Come back soon.
Oh, invite me anytime. I'm on.
Very
okay.
Good.
Thank you, Tom.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI 89.1. You have been listening to a interview that Donna did in Costa Rica. Costa Rica, of all places, with a really fine fellow named Tom Newmark. And we learned about how we are affecting our planet. We have been for a long time, but there's lots of us now. And we can see the results. And Tom Newmark is involved in researching and spreading the word about carbon sequestration.
Right. So obviously, the problem with climate change seems to be that we have put too much carbon into the air through all kinds of ways, you know, cars, gasoline, farming, all of those things. But apparently, to get the carbon out of the air, other than not putting more in, it goes back into the soil through photosynthesis. So just growing plants will put the carbon out of the air back into the soil where it's very useful in the soil. So certain kinds of farming that don't put more agrochemicals into the soil apparently take the carbon out of the air and into the soil. So that's called carbon sequestration, sequestering the carbon. If you want to know more about Tom's work, you can Google the Carbon Underground. That's a nonprofit organization that he uses to kind of talk about and spread the word about it. Or Regeneration International is a more agronomic organization. Or the beautiful place in Costa Rica where I got to spend some time with Tom and his wife, Terry, is called Finca Luna Nueva Lodge. That's a place where you could go and visit and see toucans and sloths.
Sloths!
Sloths! Can you imagine that? And it's just one of those, if one has not ever been to the rainforest, as I had not, it was a mind-boggling experience. I have to say, it's about as, like, the first time, have you ever been snorkeling, Lana?
Yes, once. Yes.
Me too.
Yeah.
Because I didn't grow up on the ocean. But once you look under the water and you see all this life going on there, your perception is forever changed. And I have to say, a visit to the rainforest also does that to you. So that's Finca Luna Nueva Lodge, which is a beautiful place to stay and learn about all the kinds of things that grow in that kind of climate. It's
including
amazing.
Chocolate.
Yes.
Chocolate.
Oh, yes. We learned to make chocolate, and I got to see it growing in the pods, and we drank it, we ate it, we made it, we did everything with
bathed
chocolate.
In it. Very good.
Yes, it was wonderful. Wonderful.
Great. Thank you for going to Costa Rica and bringing us back all that fine information, Donna.
I even brought some chocolate back, but we've long since eaten it now.
Very good. Well, there's things going on here in Central Iowa.
A lot.
And so the Donna Lana Kitchen News Department has sort of been at it. In other words, I've been kind of noticing things in the local media. And I noticed that the Dakota Access Pipeline is marching along quite a bit. They sort of seem unstoppable, no matter if people don't want them to be in their land or not. And just this last weekend, there were 32 people arrested after there was a protest in eastern Iowa at Montrose, Iowa, Saturday, October 1st. There were 200 protesters, and they call themselves the Water Protectors, which is not a bad thing to be protecting.
And we have a lot of water that needs protecting in Iowa.
And so they're doing their part down there. And so the Dakota Access Pipeline people, they were boring down into things and tearing things down. And the protesters were arrested for knocking down a security fence and flinging themselves over. And this was organized by a grassroots collective, Mississippi Stand, Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement, an organization called Bold Iowa, and 100 Grannies United for a Livable Future. I got another bit of an email and noticed that the 100 grannies, or not all 100 of them, but representatives of them, they were the first ones to kind of fling themselves over and make a run for it. And
yes, they, grannies, what do we got to lose, you know?
It's true. It's true. And so hats off to all those people. And yes, they did get arrested, and yes, they did get cited. And I think we'll be hearing more and more about this sort of thing, because not only in all along the route of this pipeline, but people are kind of upset about this all over. And here is another related pipeline.
Yes, now this is a very interesting item that Lana is bringing to our attention.
Ames Tribune, Saturday, October 1st. Ames Food Bank supply is running low. Okay? Mid-Iowa Community Action Food Pantry gives away nearly 6,500 pounds of food last August, and almost doubled that, and gave away more this past summer in July. But they've been running low lately. They have these pictures here of empty shelves. Strange this time of year. And
right, how could we not have enough food right now, right here?
It is determined that the influx demand was caused by growing Iowa State University's enrollment. That makes sense. And the influx of workers for the Bakken Pipeline.
Okay, Bakken Pipeline workers, these much-touted union jobs, are taking food from the food bank?
Well, they must need it. I mean, the food bank is not kind of like where you'd your first choice, I don't think, unless you were really, really hungry. The director of the food bank, Sunny Thompson, noted that the migrant laborers in Story County, as they're building the Dakota Access Pipeline, are causing this demand. And she said, those workers qualify as homeless because they don't have permanent housing while they build the pipeline. So, yes, they can get this food, but it kind of raises the question, they must need this food. So, what happened to all those good jobs? It's something to think about, something to talk about.
It's really puzzling. I actually do not understand this. Hopefully we'll get more information on it, because I don't understand why these high-tech good jobs that are being union jobs that are supposed to be maybe one of the only assets of the pipeline, even though it would be short-lived, the jobs, mm-hmm. It's while building. So why are these people having to have food pantry food?
Yeah, I am not – I myself am not – begrudging anyone food from the food pantry.
No.
But it's sort of like these low-paid workers at big box stores that sort of have the same problem. We are subsidizing them because their wages aren't high enough. This is interesting. And
so the pipeline builders are not getting wages high enough to feed themselves.
Well, it is implied here. And the fact that the food bank is running low on supplies. And this is the Ames Food Bank,
right,
now,
which
folks.
Is
this is Central Iowa.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. I one of the things I always love about Ames is I feel like our food bank and like Food at First and all these activities, that we have made a huge effort in this community where people really did not have to go hungry.
Right. It's estimated that the Ames community, Central Iowa community, donates 6,000 to 7,000 pounds of food a month. To feed the hungry. And I hope we're doing good at that. Everyone deserves a good meal. Everyone deserves a lot of good meals.
Right, but this is troubling that now we have to feed the workers building the pipeline that some of us don't even want.
Right. So there is your update on...
Right from the Ames Tribune, folks. We need to be asking more questions about this issue.
So pipeline information. There's some... lots of stuff coming up. You were asking about the farmer's market. Farmer's market is still going on. There's still food out there.
Oh, yeah. It's harvest season. Squash. Lots of good. I got some great winter squash kabocha and buttercup are my two favorites. Then, there's butternut. So it's squash soup. It's roasted squash. It's mashed squash. It's squash in the basis of my tomato bolognese. I love mixing some squash in with something that's traditionally tomato-y, because the squash is really sweet and it makes it just richer and deeper.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Gives you more beta carotene, too, while you're at it.
There you go.
So what else is at the market, Lana?
Oh, let's see.
Potatoes.
Lots of potatoes. We're running out of leeks. We're running out of onions. Come and buy that sort of stuff. There's a lot of meat. Meat producers there. And last of the corn. Apples. Do come and eat apples.
Oh, yeah. It's good apple season. And what about kale?
I don't think it's been a very good kale year. There's some. You can get some, but it's kind of few and far between. So get there early.
Do you think it will start to come in more now that the weather's getting a little cooler?
I don't know. Ask somebody that grows kale. I don't. So
you don't grow any kale?
I haven't this year, no.
Okay. Well, but what about arugula? Are you having arugula again, a second crop?
Yes. You can find arugula at the market because I just found some last week.
Yeah. So we're getting salad greens again, too, because it's nice and cool.
Yes, there you go. We also have some interesting things coming up. You have a lecture.
Oh, right. This is not this Wednesday, but a week from Wednesday on October 12th. This is at the Public Library, though it is sponsored by ISU and the Leopold Center. It's a fellow named Dr. Robert Wallace, and he's the author of a book called Big Farms Make Big Flu. He's also written other books called Farming Human Pathogens, Ecological Resilience and Evolutionary Process, another book called Neoliberal Ebola, Modeling Disease Emerging from Finance to Forest and Farm. And he's also consulted for the World Food and Agriculture Organization in the United States and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I believe he's a microbiologist. I could be wrong about that. But this should be all of us should be very interested in what he has to say. After all, we are here in central Iowa, kind of the epicenter of pork farming and CAFOs and things like that. So I think he'll be talking about that. Big Farms Make Big Flu. This is Dr. Robert Wallace at the Downtown Public Library, Wednesday, October 12th, 6:30 p.m. in the auditorium. Lana and I will be there.
Okay. And next week also, Thursday, October 13th, Occupy the World Food Prize is going to happen. World Food Prize is an annual event. Occupy the World Food Prize also is. And this year, Reverend Billy and his Church of Stop Shopping, including musicians and members of the choir, will be joining folks on Thursday, October 13th at the Iowa State House.
Yes. Oh, boy. That's the 12th and then the 13th.
Yes. So, you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've had music by Tony Ellis and the Musicians of Braeburn, some good banjo music. And we'll go out with some polka, because why not polka? We had an interview with Tom Newmark.
Wait, didn't you say we were going to have a polka band in downtown?
That comes on the 22nd of October. Things are just happening.
The Oktoberfest.
Yes,
we're
going to
have a live
coming.
Polka band right here in downtown.
Thanks for joining us on the Donna Lana Kitchen. Support this fine radio station. My name is Lana Noctical.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.